We have had so much death and so much injury that you can't exist without being affected.
Well, today we welcome our guest, Dr. Richard M. Fleming, to the show. Dr. Fleming is a man of many extensive qualifications and accomplished credentials. He is a physicist, nuclear cardiologist, attorney, biologist, chemist, and psychologist. He is also the author of The Fleming Inflammation and Heart Disease Theory, and the must-read book is COVID-19, a Bioweapon for Scientific and Forensic Investigation. Dr. Fleming has been fearless in the face of malicious political dogma occurring worldwide via the Trojan horse that is COVID-19 and the vaccine agenda. It is an honor to speak with you today, Mr. Dr. Fleming.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Our pleasure. So my first question for you was, now we've seen you speak in a number of interviews and at several events, Dallas, Texas being one, where you mentioned that these vaccines contain mRNA, which is becoming obvious common knowledge, and any leakage of these mRNA produces prions-like disease. Could you please explain this process?
So a prion disease is something where the proteins inside the body change their normal shape and become abnormal so they don't function. So something that is a prion is a substance that can get into the body that when it comes into contact with your regular proteins will change the shape of those proteins. That causes some problem both structurally but function-wise as well. So a classic example that many people know about is bovine spongiform encephalopathy, also known as mad cow disease. There are a number of other neurologic diseases that are like that. There's also amyloidosis of the heart, which causes abnormal proteins and function of the heart. There's amyloidosis, again, abnormal proteins of the pancreas that can cause diabetes. there's also the ability to change the very structure of the proteins that are in your blood that are associated with clotting. So some of the work that we did between September and November of 2021 that just got published mid-January of this year have to do with what happens when the actual vaccines, the Pfizer and Moderna, which is the RNA, or the Janssen, which would also be AstraZeneca, which is DNA, when those vaccines are added directly to human blood under a microscope. So we looked at that and we've published that now. It took a little bit more than a year to do it. In fact, the original rejections of it from the journals, from the medical journals, had to do with, well, we don't think our readers would be interested, to during the last few months before the final journal accepted it, two different journals said, well, if we publish this, it will cause everybody to question the vaccines, which I thought was a reasonable thing for them to question. That's part of my job, is to do the science and to publish the results. It's not to have a preconceived idea, although typically I have an idea what's going to happen. I won't know until I do the research. and the reason for bringing that up is I'm sure everybody has seen, all these clots being taken out of people that look like they have no red color. Well, those clots appear to be abnormally folded clotting proteins. And so when the RNA and the DNA of these vaccines get outside of either the lipid nanoparticle for Pfizer and Moderna, or outside of the adenovirus for the Janssen or AstraZeneca versions, we know that genetic sequences are supposed to be kept inside of a cell. That's where they have a function. They, when DNA becomes RNA, it's called transcription. If you reverse that, it's called reverse transcription. So DNA to RNA transcription, RNA to proteins is called translation. All of that occurs inside of a cell. And it, the reality is that's where it's supposed to be. So once something gets outside of its natural area, it can have a consequence. And the research has shown that when genetic code, RNA or DNA, gets outside of a cell, it causes prion disease. It causes other proteins that it comes into contact to abnormally fold, and they malfunction as a result. we know that the lipid nanoparticles tend to break down, particularly if there's any disturbance in the temperature of them. They're very sensitive to that. They're put together. We don't have time to really go into how they're put together, but they're put together along with the genetic material, and they assemble into a sphere. And the larger that sphere is, we also know the more eventually genetic material will get into the cells, and the more protein will be made as a result of that. But if they break down outside of a cell, they'll leak that genetic material. Well, when we did our research of the blood and the vaccines, which we just got published and we're going to present here on the 18th of March in the Dallas area at a conference, what happens is the blood turns gray right away. It loses its red color and it becomes grayish brown, and the blood begins to clot. And so, you know, as a researcher, the question in my mind then becomes, well, why would that happen? Well, why is blood red to begin with? It's because the red blood cells, the erythrocytes, have something in them called hemoglobin, a protein. And that protein is responsible for carrying oxygen from the lungs to the body and for picking up carbon dioxide and acid, a waste product from the body, and taking it to the lungs where it's exhaled or blown off. As long as there's oxygen for the hemoglobin to attach to, you see red blood. So if you've ever had your blood drawn, most people have, you see red blood. Now, as a cardiologist, I can tell you not all blood is red, because when we're looking for genetic defects of the heart and the lungs, when we go inside the body and we sample the blood, we can see how much saturation there is. And so not all blood appears red, but once oxygen, blood's exposed to oxygen, it turns bright red. So what that told us is, you know, sort out the problems. Why is the blood immediately turning grayish brown or rusty color at best where the vaccine is? Well, is it because there's no oxygen in the room? No, because I'm still here breathing. And if there wasn't any oxygen in the room when I did that, I'd be dead right now, right? So clearly there's oxygen. So then the question becomes, what else is there? Well, there's the red cell membrane, red blood cell membrane. Well, sickle cell anemia patients have an abnormal appearing membrane, but they're still red. They still pick up oxygen. So it's unlikely it's that. Well, what else is there? Well, there's the hemoglobin, and it's a protein. And when these prions, the genetic material, comes into contact with it, it would change it, but it would change it permanently. Well, what we saw is that the red color went away and never came back. And we saw the blood clot. So you don't have to be a physicist or a nuclear cardiologist or attorney or any of the other things to, you know, make sense out of that. Something is affecting the hemoglobin, making it impossible to carry oxygen, and it's forming the blood clotting, which is that inflammatory thrombotic response. The inflammation of blood clotting is exactly what I presented at American Heart in 1994. I said heart disease and cancer and diabetes and obesity and strokes, all of these chronic diseases are a result of a body being overwhelmed and our immune system trying to respond to it with inflammation and blood clotting. And if you overwhelm it too much, you end up with disease. So when I was a medical student, we ended up with a brand new disease called AIDS, HIV. HIV was a precipitating offending organism, virus, but there were a lot of other factors involved. And when it overwhelmed the system, you ended up with AIDS, the disease, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. Severe acute respiratory coronavirus 2, which is actually, we've shown so far, three different viruses that were gain of function built, not just a virus, but everybody thinks it's one because you've got a name for it, right? SARS-CoV-2, it must be one. It's a collection. When that gets in there and overwhelms the system with this inflammatory thrombotic response, you end up with a disease known as coronavirus disease, first detected in 2019, or COVID-19. So one's precipitating, the other one is the bad outcome consequence if you don't bring it under control. Clearly, the disease that we're dealing with here is the gain of function viral bioweapons. The symptoms of that disease is everything that everybody's dealt with since: quarantining, masking, medication issues, genetic vaccines. But those are the symptoms. And if you just treat the symptoms and you don't treat the underlying disease, the gain of function research, the CRISPR technology coupled with that, and what they're doing with that, you're going to end up with a much worse symptom in the end. So in late October, the real emphasis turned from the SARS vaccines or the COVID vaccines, if you need to, use that acronym, to five different vaccines, genetic vaccines that were released, one for cancer. Now, I'm sure you've seen the movie I Am Legend. Go back and watch it. Cancer is not a disease. It's a cluster of diseases, and they have released a genetic vaccine for cancer. They have released a genetic vaccine for amyloidosis, that prion disease that's actually being made worse by the gain-of-function viruses and the genetic vaccines. I think that's interesting. They have one for cystic fibrosis. They have one for influenza. They have one for respiratory syncytial virus. So those are just the beginning. There's a good 15 that are sitting out there, and nobody is balking at this. Everybody, 3.5 years ago, and this is now the beginning of the 39th month, as of today, March 1st, right? 3.5 years ago, if you'd have told people, we're going to inject you with a genetic vaccine, people would have said, wait a minute, we kind of need some proof here, right? Today, nobody's asking for proof that these other vaccines won't harm you, let alone the question about whether there's any benefit, right? So we have shifted. We are in a new phase of this, and people really are not grasping the importance of what's gone on. So part of what I did with is COVID-19, a bioweapon, a scientific and forensic investigation. As I was prepping our research and our investigation of treatments and diagnostics, I was asking, what is it that I'm treating and diagnosing? I need to figure out what this virus or viruses looks like and where it came from. And that led to my putting down decades of research, decades of funding by mostly the US federal government, but other governments, and the published research showing these viruses had been built, that they had gained in function, that they had taken naturally occurring viruses and kept manipulating them over two decades until they had, a good three different viruses that actually cause what's known as COVID-19. And I was just doing a quick look here for the names of those viruses, just to get them to people. It's actually, one of my websites is called Fleming Method. Not that I ever wanted a website, but FlemingMethod.com. And you can go to the gain of function tab in the middle and scroll down. And what you'll find, I've actually put the material there for you to do the work on your own if you want to, is the genetic code sequences for all these viruses and the primers, to show you that what we call SARS-CoV-2 is actually three viruses that we show in the book that were designed, built, paid for. One's called SARS-CoV-RS-SHC-014. Now that virus, Ralph Baric in 2003 called SARS-CoV-Urbani. It's the same virus. If you look at the genetic sequences, it's the same virus. Another one is called SARS-CoV-MA-15. And the third one is SARS-CoV-RS-3367. All three of these were being worked on by the same people. The funding came from the United States Department of Defense, from Health and Human Services, from the National Science Foundation, from the U.S. Agency for International Development, Homeland Security, Department of Commerce, Department of the Interior, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, some $61 million, which today's dollars, I suppose, is the drop in the bucket, consider how rapidly we're bleeding out the United States in trillions of dollars. But if somebody offers you $61 million, take it. I'd encourage you to take it. still a substantial amount of money that you can do a substantial amount of things with, and they have. So that is kind of how, you know, I got into working it up and finding it and putting the information there, because to do this type of work is a violation of the Biological Weapons Convention Treaty that everybody signed, most countries signed. The United States is actually the country that prevented from being validated. We were the ones who blocked it, not all of you, not Russia, not the Ukraine. Although it's interesting to note that the Department of Defense on the 12th of November, 2019, 7 weeks before the world heard about the viruses, paid money to the Ukraine, over $400,000 to the Ukraine, to write a report on COVID, a disease that yet didn't exist, right? Now, the US DOD and US government had fact checkers a year ago that looked at that, and they said, no, that's, you're getting it wrong. The DOD gave it to them for something else and then later added to it COVID. Well, when did they add it to it? April and June of 2020. Okay, so if you go look at the US Department of State website where our funds are distributed so that you can see it, and you go run down the funding that went to the Ukraine out of the Labyrinth Corporation, you'll find that in April and June of 2020, there's no documentation by the Department of Defense or the U.S. government in any agency showing there's been any change. And you can follow the contracts. I mean, there's little dots that you follow each one of them, and it tells you what happened. Why is that dot there? What changed? What was altered? What additional money was there? There's nothing in that area to suggest. So either the U.S. Department of Defense twice forgot to include something that's kind of significant, or they covered it up, and originally gave them over $400,000 to write a report on COVID 7 weeks before anybody on this planet even knew that there were viruses that were leaking out of Wuhan. Now, it is interesting also to note that we know that those viruses were out of Wuhan before December. In fact, there's research from Milan, Italy, where biopsies, tissue specimens were taken from patients in August and September of 2019 that were positive for the viruses. And then you do the Wuhan games and the military games and the shutting down, people weren't outside and the athletes were being temperature probed and told to wash their hands, and Wuhan participants were showing up in hospitals. And you can see, they knew it was out. They knew it was out and it was being spread just rapidly. One thing that apparently, you know, the Australians got right was detecting the HIV component, because part of what we show in the book is that Xu Zheng Li inserted the glycoprotein 120 segment of HIV into these spike proteins in the early 2000s to make them more infective. And she took something that wasn't infective and made it infective. You know, those HKU4 and HKU3 spike proteins didn't infect people prior to that. But after they did their little research, it became quite infected. Oops, I don't hear you there, Wayne.
Sorry, I was having trouble unmuting. There we go. You might have to cut that little bit out there for a second. But yeah, look, it's quite incredible that this has actually been able to go on for as long as what it has without the information that people like yourself have tried to bring to light. Actually making it to the public. We're what, 3 years in now, and the media is only just starting to admit that the masking was wrong and that the lockdowns were wrong and that they've made mistakes here and made mistakes there. Knowing what you know now and knowing what you've seen, do you feel like this has all been deliberate and concerted, or do you believe that they've just screwed up along the way and made major mistakes?
Well, to begin with, I don't know. I can't guarantee you whether they intentionally released or accidentally released the viruses. My impression, based upon their behavior and their panic mode, is that it got out before they were ready for it too. Because when you look at Anderson's emails and White House emails and Fauci's emails, and you see the back and forth, it's very clear that these people are in panic mode, which if you had intentionally released it, you wouldn't be in panic mode. You'd be controlling the scenario. You know, Fauci has been a bureaucrat. You know, I was a medical student when HIV came out. And towards the end of my medical college education, that's when he took his position at NIAID. He's been a bureaucrat for decades. And yet you can see when he has to give testimony before Congress, this is a man who's pretty stressed, despite, you know, being in the limelight for decades, despite having come to Congress multiple times, despite, you know, I mean, he dealt with this with HIV and Ebola and a variety of issues, and he's never looked this stressed. This looks to me like a man who is trying to run a game. It got away, and now how do we cover it up? Which I think makes them even more criminal in this, because as a researcher, this is my 55th year, and I was trained by the system. I'm a product of this system, but probably not the product that they were hoping for. My analysis of it is they would like very much for all of this to go away, and they would like you to continue to not look behind the curtain, so to speak, but become distracted. And anything they can do to distract you will keep you from focusing on the fact that they've done things criminally that they shouldn't have done. And I know how the game is played, and they're desperate to make sure that Americans in particular don't catch on. So I can't speak to the laws in other countries, but I can speak to the US laws. And the way this works in the United States is there's two basic judicial systems. There is the civil litigation, you know, attorneys like me filing a suit, or you filing a suit, right? You can do it pro se, wouldn't suggest it, but go for it. And there's criminal suits, but that requires the government agencies, the attorney generals or the district attorneys that work for the people. Because if you violate the law, that has a different consequence. And unfortunately, you know, to get this out and expose this requires that we go after them criminally. I know a lot of people. Look, there's 1.1 million dead Americans. I can't speak to the numbers in Australia, but there, I probably could have looked them up beforehand. 1.1 million dead Americans, which means we've lost more Americans to COVID than we have lost military troops since this country, our country, began in 1776. The VAERS numbers, just take them at face value. So, there's one paper that says VAERS may be off, right? 1%, 10%, one paper. Okay, I won't hang my hat on anything for one paper. But here's the point. 1.5 million maimed Americans, if that doesn't get your attention, adding one or two zeros behind it isn't going to bother you. But 1.5 maimed Americans are more injuries to U.S. citizens than we've had military injuries. Casualties, not deaths, but just wounded since 1776, right? We have accepted 32,500 plus odd vaccine deaths from these three vaccines, which way outstrips anything else in our history, right? Absolutely. That's more deaths than the US military has suffered in every war we've been involved in, except our five bloodiest. And we lose more people to COVID-19 every week than we lost at Pearl Harbor or Twin Towers on 9/11. Now, those numbers and 6.7 million people worldwide, which are more people than Hitler managed to massacre in his concentration camps. If those numbers can't wake up people in the world, nothing will. In the United States, the ability to wake Americans up and go to 10letters.org. So if you have American friends, tell them to go to 10, the number 10 letters, letters.org. Every American can go on that website, takes a minute and a half of their life, put their name, their address in there, and their state. Now, if they don't want that to be shown, there's a box to click that says, don't show my name and address. But we need that because we've got 50 states. And by putting your information there, it will form a cover letter to the governor and the attorney general of each person's state. And then they can download the indictment letter that shows what crimes have been committed. It's 6 pages long, signed by myself, Dr. McCarron, who's probably one of the world premier neurobiologists in prion diseases in Japan, Mr. Charles Rixey, who's a former instructor for the U.S. military for weapons of mass destruction, who, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, told me I was a conspiracy theorist. I don't know, folks, look at my face. Do I look like a conspiracy theorist? I mean, I'm 67. I'm 55 years of research. I'm not a conspiracy man. I need facts. I'm sorry?
As a psychologist, you would be very familiar with mass formation psychosis and cognitive dissonance. Could you explain a little bit about that?
To begin with, I'm not a fan of that term. And that's because I am a psychologist, right? Not a PhD psychologist, just a master's. That term is a very loose, ambiguous term. It really means, look, you can't understand what's being told to you because somebody else has so manipulated the information. Flip sides. The other side's saying the same thing. You can't see what's really going on because they've got you so convinced and confused. All right. That's always existed. We don't need a term that says you're confused. Somebody else thinks you're confused because you just don't get it. That's really what that means, right? Well, here's the reality. What do you do to change that? You get the facts out. You get the information, right? And that's going to, you know, and people are seeing that, right? Up front, everybody was dealing with, oh my goodness, okay, we have a bad infection going on. What do we do? The government tells us to do this, right? I mean, why did Israel go into just complete obedience? Because Israel's been at war for most of the years it exists, and its people are used to expecting the government is going to protect them, right? They all have to go in the military service. So they've developed this sense of we trust the government. It's kind of shattering when you have to recognize that maybe your government is doing some things wrong. This is particularly problematic for the U.S. We don't need some cutesy term for it, or the pretense that somebody else is manipulating your mind. As a U.S. citizen, it is hard for people to wrap their brains around, wait a minute, aren't we the ones, along with other people, that went to war to take out Adolf Hitler? Aren't we the ones that have gone to war to try to deal with people that are bad folks? So how can we be the bad guys? Because I don't feel like a bad guy. My family doesn't feel like a bad guy. Well, here's the thing. American citizens are not the American government. Chinese citizens are not the Chinese government. Australian citizens are not the Australian government, right? So we have to, once you wrap your brain around the fact and you realize that, wait a minute, there are people that literally did violate the law. In the United States, we want to believe that we're the good guys. Well, I would argue we are. But some of the people in our government are not. Some of the people in our government have been doing very bad things for a good number of years, decades. Decades, and I could go into a history of it, but that's another topic altogether. But I can tell you the way that I was trained as a JFK kid and my doctoral training and the programs that we ran every week, which is what everybody has come to know as a event 201 scenario. We ran those every week. That was part of our training. So we have bad people who have done bad things. And we, the United States, need to call them on the carpet. We need to hold them criminally accountable. The book, Is COVID-19 a Bioweapon?, has the scientific and forensic information in it to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt where the monies came from, who they went to, what papers they published showing what they'd done, and the two patents that are critical, because patents, you don't get patents for an idea. You have to prove you've done it. And the two key areas are the furin cleavage site, critical for this virus to infect, which no other SARS virus has this furin cleavage site. And the patent that shows that NIAID, National Institutes of Allergies and Infectious Disease, under the control of Dr. Anthony Fauci, provided money to Ralph Baric at the University of North Carolina for work that was done in a patent that was issued, the purpose of which is to alter the spike protein of coronaviruses, which is kind of what he lied to Dr. Senator Rand Paul about when he said, no, we don't fund gain of function research on coronaviruses. Well, I'm sorry, the patent says otherwise, and the patent's issued by the U.S. federal government. So congratulations. That's a federal crime. How he has not ended up in prison is because there hasn't been enough push by American citizens. And FYI, for the people in Australia, once we clean up this mess, and if you can help encourage other Americans to go to 10letters.com and clean up this mess by sending the documents in, once we clean up this mess, you'll start to see it. You can already see some tremors with Wall Street Journal releasing, you know, the Energy Department. It looks like maybe could be possibly, you know, a lab origin to this thing. Yeah, you think? Once we're done here, we're coming to help the rest of you, because we're not going to. I'm not stopping until we're done. The people I'm working with aren't stopping until we're done. And I can speak for at least a half dozen of us that once we're done here, we're coming to the other countries to clean up the mess that we helped start. Your country's kind of helped do it too. But, you know, the reality is we've got the biggest blame in this. And once we're done, we're coming to the other countries to help the rest of you get your people corrected and in prison for the ones that were involved.
That's extremely encouraging news. We've been saying this all along. Look, it's going to take one nation to actually get the globalists off their back for everybody else to come good. And I mean, like, literally, they're coming after the guns in America. We've been begging people, please, please don't give up your firearms. The minute you let them strip you of that right, they're going to go full dictatorship on us. They know the American people are sitting there watching how badly the Australians and other people are being treated and subjected to, like, with the people being bashed and put into bloody comas almost for not wearing a goddamn mask. And they know that if the American people give up their firearms, they're next. So it's important.
If you read through what's called the Federalist Papers, the original founding fathers wrote something called the Federalist Papers because, you know, originally we had the Articles of Confederation to run the country, and that was a blithering disaster. I mean, General Washington at the time couldn't get troops from one state to go fight in another state, and they went back to modify the Articles of Confederation. They realized it was a disaster. It wasn't going to work. So they sat down and they wrote this Federalist document, this document that gave all the power to the federal government. And the name of that document is called the United States Constitution. But within that document, they wrote amendment clauses because they knew they would have to come back and amend the Constitution to restore the rights of the people and the states. So they put that into the Constitution, and then they gave the federal government all this power. It's called Federalist System. And then they went back to bring the rights back to the states and the people. So the founding fathers wrote a series of documents called the Federalist Papers. And if you read the Federalist Papers, you know, I can't even get Americans to read the Constitution. It's not that long. If you read the Federalist Papers, what you will see is that the founding fathers had that amendment, the Second Amendment for the right to bear arms, for two reasons. First off, they looked at the Italian government at the time that had kept weapons for the people so they could go hunting to feed their families. That was the first thing. But the founding fathers had an even deeper reason for doing that. The founding fathers, believe it or not, recognized that with time, there could be a threat to the American citizen. And that threat, they saw, would be big business. When Eisenhower left office, he had a speech that he prepared that was televised across the U.S. and around the world, but at that time, I don't know if anybody around the world was watching U.S. television, where he warned the world about the military-industrial complex that had started in the United States after World War II. You know, they brought German intelligence agents and scientists over out of Nazi Germany and integrated them into the U.S. government. And, you know, the biggest rush was, were the Americans or the Russians going to get the best and the brightest? You know, that was the rush at the end of the war.
Yeah.
And it's really sad because I've lived my life knowing these terms and now watching all of you have to learn these terms. I mean, I've always kind of thought part of my life responsibility was to make it so that all of you didn't have to know about this stuff, that we would deal with it on our own. But we've done such a poor job, haven't we, that even despite our efforts,
it's big tech, my friends. Honestly, I've spent the last 20 years trying to get this information to people, trying to tell people that, look, they're coming, whether you like it or not. And yeah. I got laughed at, I got ridiculed, I got mocked. It's only now in the last year and a half with everything going full COVID tyranny that I've got people coming back to me going, mate, how the hell did you know that this was coming? And what do I do to save my family? And the same answer keeps coming out of my mouth that I've been given. Look, you've got to go back 20 years and you've got to listen to me then. And maybe we actually stand a chance. But right now, unless the rest of these people wake up to themselves and start to see what we can see, we're fighting an uphill battle. I'm just glad that people like yourself haven't just sat there on your hands and given up, because, I mean, it wouldn't have been hard for you just to go, well, I'm going to have to wipe my hands of this because it's too hard.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately for me, I'm a pureblood Viking. So my bloodline traces through Rollo from Norway. And, you know, I always tell people, you know, one of the documents that people like to misquote is, the United States Constitution, they start with we the people. Well, we the people isn't in the U.S. Constitution. It's in the Declaration of Independence. And I know that because two-thirds of that document is a Flemish document, Flemish family documents translated by Jefferson from Flemish to English. And the other third of it was from the British people of the 1600s, where they talked about King Charles, and they inserted that in there. And that's the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, so my bloodline, my ancestors are responsible for those documents. You know, Captain Fleming crossed Delaware with Washington on Christmas Eve. I mean, Vikings are too stupid to go home when there's a war, right? Everybody else is supposed to go home. We just don't do that. It's not in our, it's not in our nature. It's not in our bloodline. And I'm not going home now. I've got a t-shirt that I show people that says I'm Fleming. I will quit when I'm done. And we're not done. I mean, some of the interviews earlier this week, they said, didn't I feel vindicated by the Wall Street Journal? No, I don't. Vindication, if that ever happens, is going to be when this is said and done. All this has done is opened up a recognition that maybe there's a problem, Houston, and we need to address it. And that's great. And, you know, it's the beginning. But to let you know where I'm at in this, I mean, what I originally called this a year and a half ago, what I was doing was Operation Blue Dern or Blood Eagle. What I started about a week ago, as we've gotten more people on board with 10 letters and really driving this, because we went from 4,200 to 4,800 letters in the last 2 days in the United States. I changed the name of it after we started to get support from a number of people at the beginning of this week to Operation Normandy Beach, which is we've now coalesced the force to begin landing on the beach to get a beachhead to begin the campaign to take and put these criminals in prison where they belong and to restore science and medicine to its potential before it was hijacked, stolen, massacred. But we have to treat this disease.
I was just going to say the whole doctor-patient relationship just absolutely got completely destroyed by the government doing this. I mean, I for one, because I've had to go through a bit of a medical issue, but I've been backwards and forwards from doctors and specialists and for the last 3 years. But it's gotten to the point now where I'm reading vials before I'm letting anyone inject me with anything. I'm staring at the bottles before they even come anywhere near me across the I have lost all of my faith, all of my trust, all of my hope, everything in the system completely. At this point, my doctor is in South Africa, as far as I'm concerned, because Dr. Shankara Chetty is about the only man that I trust that has a bloody couple of letters before. I mean, obviously, there's people like yourself not included in that. But I mean, like, personally, that's the only doctor that I know I've got in my phone that I can trust that isn't out to try and get me. And then that's really sad, because now they're coming for Dr. Chetty.
Yeah. Well, I have told people, you know, the importance of the letters behind my name is that PhDs solve problems, MDs treat problems, and JDs cause problems. And, you know, you have to know what people are capable of doing. MDs, by and large, are not able to process a lot of this stuff and to solve the problem. The vast majority, that's not the training set, skill set. The skill set is to be able to memorize lots of information, to coalesce it and use it and treat somebody immediately. And that's a significant skill set, but it is not a skill set that is helpful when you have a new problem, because what you end up doing is you end up looking at PhDs like me saying, what do you do? Well, to get a PhD like me that's going to be able to tell you what to do in medicine, it also has to be a PhD MD. And I don't know how many of us there are, but it's not a lot. And the U.S. government, in so many ways, the FDA, the CDC, Health and Human Services, I mean, the people that funded this gain of function research are the same ones telling the doctors what to do. And the doctors, like so many people, want to believe that the system works. So for many, they didn't question it. Your viewers may not like this statement, but I'll make it. I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm anti-stupid. Okay? And if you look at these genetic vaccines and you do what I did right up front, which was to take the emergency use authorization documents and statistically look at the data that's in them. And they're on my website. They're number 2, 3, and 51 out of 444 papers that I've got out there for people. That's how many times I've had to quote these things. And you look to see, do these EUA documents show a statistical reduction in COVID cases for vaccinated people versus unvaccinated people? And the answer is they don't. There's no statistical reduction. Now, I did the math on that. I ran the numbers on that. One of my questions is, why in the world didn't anybody else do that? I mean, I can't be the only person on planet Earth who remembers how to do statistics for research, right? So I want to know why the FDA didn't run the numbers on that. I want to know why the emergency use authorization documents don't have a single piece of data, outcome data, that is valuable for a genetic, for a vaccine. Namely, what do you look for? You look to see if the body makes T cell responses with the chemicals that T cells make, the first part of your immune response that occurs, the INNATE response that occurs at 3 to 5 days. And you look for antibody responses, the adaptive humoral response at 7 to 10 days. There's no data on either one of those in any of these emergency use authorization documents. The proof that you're getting an immune response to the genetic vaccine, the drug vaccine biologic, is a demonstration that you have T cell and B cell responses. That's the data, and it's not there. It's how do you approve as a committee? I mean, I watch these committee, you know, meetings, and I will never get those hours of my life back. But how do you approve something for which the documents that you use to approve them have no data to show the response in the human body that you're supposedly approving the drug for? Right? I mean, that's
for
just
people who don't
insane.
Quite get what he's saying. Like, that's literally like going in and getting your car registered, getting your rego check done. Then you look at where your brake test is supposed to be, and it says that it's passed, but there's no information there to show you what the brakes have actually done, whether they've even been applied.
Except that in this case, they didn't even put brake test.
No, that's incredible.
You know,
I believe that you mentioned that mRNA is being slipped into the regular standard vaccines. What have you got to say about that? Is that something that's been confirmed?
Yeah, so I mean, they have released the data already that shows that they have released genetic vaccines for cancer, amyloidosis, cystic fibrosis, influenza, and respiratory syncytial virus. And nobody has raised an eyebrow. Nobody has said, are we going to test this first, right? It's just they're out there. I mean, I have been watching ads for the influenza one that is pointed at older people. So I guess I'm in that group because it says, if you're over 60, I'm 67, big deal. If you're over 60, I'm sorry?
Don't look a day over 50.
That bad, huh? If you're over 60, you could help your government and the people by participating in a new in the new mRNA influenza vaccine put out by Pfizer. I'm sorry. I'm not sure how they lost all credibility in this, but as a research scientist, when I see people being encouraged to become, to take vaccines by, we're going to give you ballet tickets, we're going to give you baseball stadium tickets, we're going to give you Krispy Kreme donuts, we're going to give you, I'm sorry, what? If you really have something that's useful for people, you don't have to bribe them. That's called a bribe, in case people are familiar with that. That's called a bribe, right? I mean, if you do this, we'll give you, for the love of God, a Krispy Kreme donut?
That was incredible. You could cop a feel, you could get a joint, you could bloody have a beer. I mean, like, I spoke to a gentleman here not so long ago. I bought a vehicle from a fella about 6 months ago, and somehow he avoided getting the shots and actually, you know, was sort of joking about it. But then I said to him, look, obviously with all the stuff that's floating around the internet, that he's like, what stuff? I said, well, clearly you didn't get the shots because you've seen that it's causing myocarditis and the footy players are falling on the field. And he's like, oh, no, 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 no. He said, as soon as they started offering me lottery tickets and they offered me beer and bloody burgers, and he said, that was enough for me. He said, I didn't know anything about blood clots or any of that kind of stuff. And that's incredible. 2.5 years on, And that was the key thing, the big mistake that they made for a lot of people, the freebies. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if they've got to offer you something for something like to take a bloody medication, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, I mean, isn't I would find that embarrassing if I had to do that. I mean, it's I didn't bribe my kids growing up. You know, it's like, I'm sorry. The reason you're doing this is because dad said you're going to do it. You know, I'm sorry. That's really old school, isn't it? But, you know, they also knew that actually I love them and care about them and wasn't going to let some idiot do something to them. And when the FDA, when the US FDA had their meetings for vaccines for the kids, and I couldn't believe this came out of the one guy's mouth, but he said, we won't know what it's going to do to the kids, the children, until we do it.
Yeah, blew
Did
my
you
mind.
Honestly, just say that. Because isn't that what the Nazis were doing? I mean, that's called experimentation on the kids, for crying out loud. Yeah, we have these criminals have to be taken down. They have to be, at a minimum, put in prison. And it's only after the criminal case, the disease of the gain of function is addressed, that we can even begin to address the symptoms. And amazingly enough, once you take care of the disease, the symptoms start to take care of themselves. So all of the other stuff will fall into place. But if we don't take care of the disease, the gain of function and the CRISPR and everything that they're playing with it, because they're all the same players. If we don't take care of that, the disease will come back with a vengeance and it will kill the host, the body that it's in. It doesn't matter whether it's a person or a nation or a planet.
Fish rots from the head down.
Yep.
Now, a question that I sort of don't really want answered, but I do kind of need answered. And we have asked a couple of doctors and scientists along the way, but this was sort of earlier days, and it was something that I know sort of rubbed Dr. Malone up the wrong way. If people are going to be making this spike protein for life, if there's no off switch with these mRNA shots, and it's just you've had the shot, now your body knows how to make the spike protein, that's it. Does that not essentially make you a carrier?
Yeah, so there's several several things in that. So let's start with something a little bit different, and then we'll come back to that. If I have a professor moment, you'll bring me back to that. There's something called transferable transmissible vaccines. And these are vaccines that have been published, and the publications talk about, you know, what viruses they are, HIV, rabies, influenza, SARS-CoV-2. And what vectors are carrying them, you know, lipid nanoparticles, adenoviruses, attenuated viruses in animal models. Animal models, bats, mice, rabbits, dogs, sheep, cow. For SARS-CoV-2, the animal model tested is human. Didn't test any other animal, human. The purpose of which is you inject into a human, you see if they can transmit or transfer, and it has to do with how much of it there is. So this is part of the shedding phenomenon. And the US government has published two documents. The first one was either 2015 or 2017. It's on my website, Guidance to the Industry on Shedding. Literally, they said shedding, right? And gene vax and gene therapy, right there. The US government's document, not mine. I didn't. You know, you can't make this stuff up. Reality is so much better than fiction. And then another one, I think in 2021, where they talked about the vector of the product of the vector. Well, that's, so you have to understand a little bit more. What's the vector? Well, the vector is the lipid nanoparticle or the adenovirus, the way of getting it in. So what's the product of that? Well, the final product would be the spike protein. Do we know if that's what's going back and forth between people? We don't. Why? Because nobody sampled it. I mean, who's going to pay for that? And what are you going to look for? Because we don't know yet what to look for. Do we start looking for spike proteins? Do we start looking for mRNA or DNA? we know that there's more than just the genetic sequence for the spike protein because it replicates too much. So you have to have the replicase part of the open reading frame that's earlier in the genetic code sequence to get this effect, okay? But here's perhaps the best news. And Dr. Malone also has a patent out there for glycoprotein 120, the HIV part of a what he calls a gene vaccine therapy that he's got the patent on. So it's a vaccine to be injected into people that he describes as gene therapy to make you make part of HIV, the glycoprotein 120 part. So, you know, there's on Fleming Method, you'll see I've published the research we have that shows what treatments work for the infection, what treatments work for the disease, COVID, once the inflammation and blood clotting's on. So I have quantitative major data on that. It's been published. It's been presented at medical conferences in the United States. It has been quoted in other research since then. So it's on my website. I also have in there the information based upon clinical outcomes. So you can imagine I'm not the warm fuzzy guy in the room. I like objective science. So I can tell you, I know it's working versus, well, you got better. Can I prove it's what I did? Yeah, that's a little bit more challenging if I can't measure something. I want to be able to tell you with certainty. So that's why I say, I you know, it's not that warm fuzzy thing. I want to be able to look at you and say, if I tell you to do this, I know because we've measured it. But so what we've been depending upon for the vaccinated and the shedding are people, their skin rashes go away, their mentation improves. I mean, it's good evidence, but I want measurement. And my brain works backwards of most people, as you would guess. So my way of getting rid of it is to try to get you to make the spike protein. And that may seem like the opposite of what it should do, but the entire set of treatments are designed to get you to make the spike protein and then to attack the spike protein when it's outside the cells to keep it from harming you. Why do I want you to make spike protein? Because to do that, your DNA has to open up. It has to transcribe DNA into RNA in a messenger transfer and transfer RNA. When it does that, we have enzyme systems that look at our DNA to make sure everything's what it's supposed to be, to rematch it, to repair it for damage, and to restore it back to a double helix. You don't have to take out the entire sequence. You just have to have enough of it corrected so that when it tries to open it up to make it, there's not enough of it to make the spike protein. It won't be made. And there's also the correction of what's called the UTRs, which are the untranslated RNA, which is basically the code for make this protein. And if we can affect that by opening up the DNA and let the repair mechanisms kick in, we may only need a couple nucleotide bases to be corrected back to normal for any given individual for it to become, okay, so it's stuck in your DNA, but it's never going to get made again because it can't find the code to run it.
So you're saying basically, even though we've been told that this is a permanent change, chances are people's bodies will actually maybe be able to learn that it's a negative change and prevent it from happening in itself.
Yeah, the vast majority of our DNA is designed, so 18% of our DNA has what's called long interspersed nucleotide elements, one, which are designed to take outside genetic material and put it into our DNA. But also a large part of our DNA is designed to say, when should our DNA be used? When should we make RNA from our DNA so that we can make a protein? What's the stimulus for that? What's the code sequence for that? And that's where our native DNA has the ability to see a problem and to enter some of those corrections. And a single It may be as simple as a single nucleotide-based sequence. I don't know. But with enough corrections, when it goes to make more spike protein, it's going to get an error code that says, this doesn't work. This isn't needed, so we're not going to code for it. And B, it's not going to be a functional spike protein. It'll break up inside a cell and be destroyed.
How confident are you that this is going to be the case?
Without getting inside the cell and doing it, I'm pretty confident. I wouldn't have put the sequence out there and shown it to people. And based upon the improvement of symptoms, I would argue it looks like that's happening. And the genetic material we have is extremely sophisticated. I mean, you know, you consider it as only 4 nucleotide bases, 64 codons, but the DNA that a human has, it's been estimated that you can encode more knowledge in human chromosomes than there is in the universe to put in a human chromosome. That's a tremendously intelligent system. That is very functional. So the problem for me is that if we don't stop it where it's at right now, then I'm not so sure that's going to happen, because the subsequent vaccinations are getting the immune system in people to shift from what's called an IgG3 to an IgG4, which instead of recognizing it as something that needs to be dealt with, it's kind of acquiescing and saying, well, it's kind of part of us. And the more they do that, the more those genetic codes that get into the DNA, the more problem we have, the more challenging it's going to be to correct. So where we're at right now, they've kind of been messing around with one system, but 5 vaccines were just released, all of which are focusing on inserting genetic sequences into human DNA.
That's astounding. And they're actually talking about vaccines for autism now. I mean, where does this end? Where does it stop? It seems like the main people that they're targeting are the elderly and the infirm. I mean, the diseases and the things that they're talking about aren't common in all of the population, if you know what I mean. So it's like...
Alzheimer's disease since January of 2020 in the United States, there are about 430,000 excess deaths due to inflammatory thrombotic response diseases, like I laid out in 1994, and pyogenic Alzheimer's disease, of which there's over 107,000 excess U.S. deaths from Alzheimer's since January of 2020.
Wow, what does that tell you?
It tells you that we're ahead of the schedule. What I talked about at Event 2021 in June of 2021, that 4.5-hour lecture I gave, what I was trying to show people is that the animal models showed that based upon the mice models and the rhesus macaque models, it would take 1.5 to 2 years before we would start seeing that, but we would start seeing those prion diseases. We're ahead of the curve. We're not beginning to see them. Just Alzheimer's deaths alone, 107,000 excess deaths. Over 425,000 excess deaths from heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, cancer, strokes, all these inflammatory thrombotic response diseases. I have in my collection from a USB drive to give to the attorney generals over 4,900 files of documents putting all this together. And I've got it numbered and sequenced so they can just follow it. The book is completely laid out. Everything in the book, every reference source in the book has every PDF, every published paper addressed in it. For all the research papers for the last almost 100 years, more than 100 years. I forget, we're in 2023, and I think the paper started in 1905 that I reported on, to bring it into sequence. Every one of those The PDFs are there, including documents that can't be found anymore.
That's an astounding.
So I knew in advance. It's necessary. It has to be done. Again, my 55th year of research, I didn't do this. I did not enter to do this type of work for somebody like Fauci or these other people to come along and hijack the system and mess with it. You may or may not sense, I take a certain amount of, I don't think pride's a bad thing, particularly when applied appropriately. I have a certain amount of pride in not only my work, but the people who've taught me. You know, they did the work before me that I build upon to move humanity down the line to a better humanity. That's an obligation I feel quite deeply about. And I'm not going to allow them to, well, I can't do it by myself, but I'm not going to stand idle and not warn people and tell people about this and point out these crimes and allow them to continue to do it on my watch without my at least saying something about it. I mean, either these people go down or I die trying. Well, and I don't care which it is. I do. Well, I do. Right. But the point being, I'm not going to back off. You know,
we're invested 100% into this, and there's no point. You can't do it by halves. At the end of the day, we need to be able to stand there and say, I gave my all and I've done everything I possibly could. I don't want to be sitting there on the fence going, well, you know, I could have maybe went a little bit further with this, or I could have maybe just spoke about that a little bit. Can't do that. This is the time now where this is the hill. And if we're not going to fight for that hill.
Yeah. Yeah, we're taking Normandy Beach as we speak. This is what we're doing right now. We're taking Normandy Beach. They didn't think that Normandy could be taken from the Germans in World War II, and they don't think we can take this beach. But I have news for them, and for everybody listening, they're much more afraid that the American public will send these 10letters.org documents in to the state governors and attorney generals and get the attorney generals to file grand jury indictments and hold these criminals accountable. They're much more worried about that than Americans are or anybody else about them. You know, it's kind of like people who jump in the water. I swim. I'm a scuba diver. I'm an advanced scuba diver. I love swimming in the ocean. I like sharks, guys. Okay. If sharks aren't in the water, it means there's something wrong in the water and you should be concerned more if there aren't sharks there. Sharks don't tend to bother people. You know, they're very intelligent creatures. And I had one of my professor moments, but the point was, you know, understanding what's really going on. The sharks are probably more afraid of us than we are of the sharks. And these people are more afraid of Americans and other people in the world than standing with Americans and encouraging Americans to do the right thing than Americans are of them. Because in the end, if Americans fail, they fail. But if Americans win, these criminals go to jail or better.
Well, we know what the charges are. When it comes down to it, the Nuremberg Code outlines that quite specifically. If you commit those offenses, you swing. It's as simple as that. And we've always tried to tell people we don't advocate for violence. We don't want to be them. Because that's not us. That's a them thing, the violence and the nastiness and the, but we can't sit here and forgive and forget and just go, oh, well, maybe they, you know, didn't mean it, because they'll just do it again. It's simple. After World War II, the wrong people got hung. The bankers, the people who financed and paid for all of this, it's their families doing it again now. We can't make the same mistake this time. All of them need to be imprisoned. Anybody who forced this crap that knew what they were doing needs to hang at this point. I mean, it's as simple as that. We are not barbarians, but this is a barbaric world that we're living in right now. And turn the tables, put the left into our position where we tortured them for 3 years straight. They would have burnt this whole place to the ground. We saw what Antifa did. We saw what Black Lives Matter did. We saw what every Soros-funded group does. That's exactly what would happen. If we had to turn around, if while Trump was in, he had to turn around and said, well, every single one of you is going to get injected with something. Otherwise, you're not going to work anymore. You're not going to school anymore. You're just not going to have a life. You can't get on a plane. You can't go to a funeral. They would have burnt America to the ground. Biden gets in after saying he doesn't trust any vaccine that Trump's got anything to do with. Oh, we won't be taking it if Trump has anything to do with it. The day he took office, greatest vaccine in the world. Get it into you. I mean, like, oh my God, this is the world we live in right now.
Yeah. Well, this is the world that we take back. We take back the world. We take back science. We take back medicine. And this time we do it in such a way that we don't have a recurrence of it. So we don't have in 10, 20 years, another Eisenhower statement of the military industrial complex. This time we literally have to do it right. My parents and grandparents' generation failed. They didn't address this. It's now left to my generation. I have no plans of failing. My job is to make sure that what I leave behind, whether it's for my children or future grandchildren or my friends or future friends or ex-friends, and for medicine and science, is a world where what has happened over the last several decades that we've talked about, and particularly the last 39 months, as everybody has been made painfully aware, is not repeated in the history of mankind. And we need to do this right this time, not half-hearted, and not taking people from that side and incorporating them into our society again. The lessons from World War II was you can't take bad guys and incorporate them into your government and expect to have a government that isn't filled with bad guys.
So what can you recommend for the people at home? What can they do? How can we all help? What would you say ideas people can participate in to make a difference at home?
Yeah, 10letters.org is the thing to do. The number 10 followed by letters, letters.org. I encourage everybody, if you're not an American citizen, find American citizens, you know, family, friends, relatives, get the word out there. If you can't do it that way, just get the word out there. Make Americans aware that the founding fathers in this country actually provided a mechanism to put pressure on the attorney generals. Now, in six of the states, we don't even need to depend upon the attorney generals. And we're working with those six states to try to get grand juries organized through the courts. So that's Nevada, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, and I think it's South Dakota. If not, it's North Dakota. But those states still have laws on the book that allow grand juries to be convened through the court system. And here's the one more thing about the court system. A lot of people, you know, these civil suits won't go anywhere because the courts aren't going to, you know, when you're the people that write the rules, you write the rules in such a way that in civil court, they're going to get thrown out. And I don't want more civil suits filed in the U.S., because collateral estoppel or res judicata, which are two legal terms that mean if any court has already heard the case and set it aside, every other court after that can say, we don't have to look at it. That other court addressed it. We don't have to look at it. We cannot give these people civil suits to throw out time after time after time, because the judges won't hear the civil suits in the future. We have to go after the criminal suits first with the attorney generals. And that means every American needs to go to 10letters.org, download their cover letter and their indictment letter, and mail it into both their governor and their attorney general, and remind them of the job they have. U.S. attorney generals divided in two groups, those that want to do something about this but need the support of the voters, so they can say, I've got thousands of these letters. The people want this. We're going to have a grand jury. And the cowards that won't And in that case, we need to embarrass them so badly that they will do something. Now, on those letters, there's the number of letters we track these. We're not tracking names. We're just tracking how many are out. Texas has the most. That's where I'm at, Dallas. So yay, Dallas. Yay, Texas. Number two state, take a guess. It's unfair to do that to you. California. California just passed Florida yesterday. They passed them, and they are accelerating away from them, and they are gaining ground on Texas. Californians. Now, I lived in California and Los Angeles for 7.5 years. The United States is about 60-40. It's just a matter of where you're at as to whether which 60 and which 40 you have. There are clearly people in the state of California that are demanding the attorney general there do something. And when the attorney generals start to file these indictment letters, other attorney generals will stand up. That's what's happened with the, you know, the cigarette industry and everything else. You get a few of these attorney generals together, they coalesce into a massive major case, and they go federal on the federal courts. Not just so
correct
the state.
Me if I'm wrong, but you're talking about a red and a blue state.
Absolutely.
How often does that happen?
Absolutely. The blue states.
Proof and purchase that this is actually starting to wake a few of the Democrats up. Otherwise, this would never be happening in California.
Absolutely. It is. And it's happening in other blue states as well.
Well, look at Idaho. Idaho's trying to ban it altogether. Trying to make it a misdemeanor for you to actually even inject somebody. Have you seen that?
I've seen that. I'm gonna tell you that I think that it's going to fail because I've looked at that law. But I'm not going to tell them to not do it. But it's going to take something like this criminal action. Right now, we are approaching 5,000 letters. And so you asked about Idaho. So Idaho has a small number, only 30 that have filed so far for the AGs. Texas has 259, California 231, Florida 201, Illinois 137, Ohio 133. All of these numbers are going up in the last few days. What we have seen is an exponential growth on this. There are just as many red states as blue states because the people have had it. The people are looking around, and 1.1 million dead Americans, 1.5 million maimed Americans, 33,500 plus Americans dead from the vaccines. Americans know other Americans that are dead or harmed. And when it hits home, it hits home. And I hate to say it, but I knew the way things were going that we would have to have a lot of suffering and pain for people to say, wait a minute, I know that person. Way back when I first joined American Heart and I tried to go to a university to teach just basic CPR, we wanted mannequins to teach how to do it. I was going to volunteer my time. Other faculty were too. We asked for $5,000 to buy mannequins. No, we don't have $5,000. Our budget's done. We don't have anything. Within weeks, head administrator in the administration building during the noon hour when the building was locked had a heart attack, and nobody knew how to do CPR. Within days, we had a $10,000 check.
I'll bet you
and
did.
I turned around, I went back and I said, I don't need $10,000. I'm not going to spend $10,000. I only want $5,000. Just give me a $5,000 check. I'm not in this to line anything. I got my $5,000 check. Why? Because somebody was personally affected. We have had so much death and so much injury that you can't exist without being affected.
Yeah. And sadly, that's the way a lot of people are. If it's not their front lawn, they don't care.
Yeah. And everybody's seen these signs. If you want to know what you would have done in 1939 Germany, you now know. If you're going to wait to fight a battle until it personally affects you, there won't be anybody left to fight the battle with you by the time it gets to you. When you see somebody fighting a battle, you should ask yourself, what are they fighting for? What am I fighting for? I'm not fighting to sell books. I'm terrible at that. I'm not fighting to sell you drugs off my website. I don't sell you a thing off my website.
You are terrible
at selling. I tell you what we showed.
You are terrible at selling your book. Where can we find your book? We should have plugged that a dozen times by this point.
So Skyhorse Publishing is the company that makes it, but I think you can find it on Barnes & Noble and all the other sites. But Skyhorse Publishing. Skyhorse Publishing, you know, I had this written in 2020. I couldn't get a publisher to do it. Finally, you know, Skyhorse looked at it and said, yes, we'll publish that. So, I mean, they're taking on something that other people just wouldn't touch. And it's an important topic. It's not that I wanted to write another book. I mean, I think I've written like 25 books and published somewhere around 450 to 500 papers and, you know, textbook chapters and textbooks. And, you know, that's just my goal is to educate and provide the information that people need so they know what's really going on. Skyhorse took that on. And I'm grateful for them doing it. But yeah, I'm terrible. I mean, I've got this conflict of interest thing in my back of my head that I'm constantly going conflict of interest and, but you know, yeah. So
we do the same thing, mate. We struggle with hosting with, everything else all the time. And then it's like, when it comes time to ask for donations or anything, it's like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And then you look at your bills at the end of the month and it's like, wow, we really need to do that. And then you get through another month and it's like, well, we're back where we were last month. But look, Skyhorse, I think, is extremely important and they're very valuable to us. I mean, they're publishing things that most other publishers wouldn't even let you leave on their desk.
Yeah. Yeah. And every book that I know that they've got is an important book. You know, and nobody, I don't think any of us are coming to it with the idea that, you know, we're going to get rich selling books. It's just this information has got to get out to people so they can read it. People can still read. People can still share information. You know, one of the things that the quarantining and lockdown did up front was it prevented people from talking to other people. They didn't exchange ideas. They didn't, you know, met doctors didn't exchange idea. People on the street didn't exchange ideas. And all you get fed day in and day out was what they wanted you to believe. The ability to read information and to see it and have it in front of you and, you know, and you know, be able to go back and forth. You can't do that except on a book. I mean, you can do it on PDFs and all that on computers, but I guess I'm just too old school. I write in books. I highlight in books. I make notations in books. I take other information and I write down in the books from other information. And there's nothing as solid as a book.
I absolutely agree.
Technology, books are what we will always have. So they definitely need to be valued a lot more than they have been in modern days.
Yeah, I want you to read your PDF on the computer when your computer fails or the electricity goes out. You get a book, you can open that up, get some light somewhere. You can still read that. Rebooting is called opening the cover.
No, absolutely. It's one of those things that I've always made sure every time I move from one place to the next, the books go first. Because you know when the power goes out, you know when everything else is gone, you're still going to have them there. And now with the whole censorship program that they've started to run on us, it's the 1930s book burning. I mean, now instead of having to go door to door to take your books away and actually burn your literature, they just delete it off of the internet and it's gone. So unfortunately, unless you've actually got hard copies of books like your book, if you're going to rely on that digital technology, well, it's just not going to be there, especially when they decide you've got to log in with your eyeball and you don't want to give up your privacy.
For your listeners, what they're doing by removing the PDFs and all the information from the computer is the same thing that was done in the book Fahrenheit 451, which was telling you to come bring your books and burn them so the knowledge would be lost. On the internet, the equivalent of Fahrenheit 451 is just somebody getting in there and deleting it, which is why having USB drives and PDFs of over 4,900 items is so powerful. Imagine sitting in a courtroom. Imagine Anthony Fauci or Collins or Gates or Walensky or any of the others sitting in a courtroom watching attorneys bring in boxes and boxes and boxes of 4,900 plus documents and setting it by the table. And imagine what they're going to be thinking as they're trying to figure out what's in those boxes. Now, their attorneys will have copies of it. Good luck reading all of that and making sense out of it. I've put it together. It's taken me 39 months to do it. I know exactly where to go in my documents to dig out the information that I want to show a jury to get these criminals indicted.
God, I hope that happens soon, I can tell you. So one thing, we know that you got rewarded heavily for coming out like this and for writing the book and for trying to share this information. They made a parade for you and there was like ticker tape and people blowing whistles. And is that what happened when you came out and decided to share your book?
So the government came after me a long time ago. You can go to FlemingMethod.com and read about the former case where I took on Big Pharma and the government. Yeah, no, there's no big ticker tape parade or anything like that. And I wouldn't go to it anyway, because again, this isn't what we're doing. What, you know, is what needs to be done. My ticker tape parade is looking at my kids or looking at my friends or seeing the number of people that I've been in cabs with, Uber now, right? Uber. Going back and forth to airports and other places, talking to people driving me, listening to them say, you know, I knew something was wrong and just knew something was wrong. I didn't know what it was, but I knew something was wrong. The light bulb moment that happens with people when they start to put it together and they start to take their life back. That's the ticker tape parade, right? That's the moment. You can't get better. I mean, it's like taking care of a patient and they're dying and you take care of them as a physician and they live and you, that's what you get into medicine for, right? You get into science to make a difference on things. You do this because it makes a difference. I will happily participate in the closing of the cell door of these individuals and or anything else that comes up. And I will do it not because I'm a vicious man, although I am Viking, so you know it doesn't take much for it to percolate. But because I never want to see them harm another human being as long as I live. I have seen way too many people. I have had people come to lectures I've given. And then found out a couple of weeks later, they're dead.
Just breaks your heart.
You see these people and they're coming looking for answers. And then you find out they're dead afterwards. And I realize that means I failed.
Not at all.
I failed. I didn't. Until these people are put away so no more deaths occur, any death that occurs to an extent is going to be because I didn't push fast enough, hard enough. What did I not do right to explain to people the severity of this? What did I do incorrectly so that there's still a question in somebody's mind? I mean, where did I fail? When a patient dies that I take care of, that's always there. And anybody who thinks that I don't remember the people that have died that I've taken care of, I remember, I think, most of them, if not all of them. Anybody who dies here, you know, and people say, when do we need to have all of our documents? And my answer is 6 months ago. 6 months ago. I mean, one of my sarcastic remarks to people when they want more time to prepare for something is, yeah, take your time. It's not like no one's going to die today. People will die today.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. This isn't the time to sit on your hands. But the one thing I really need to stress to you is there has been no failure on the behalf of you or any of the other brave doctors and scientists that have come forward. The failure isn't a failure. It's another criminal act. It is the covering up. It is the censorship. It is the hiding. I mean, we've had so much information that we know now was 100% correct from the start. They're only just starting to admit to it now. The lockdowns, waste of time, masks, not only a waste of time, made it worse. Every single thing that they did along the way made it worse. And we tried, we screamed at the top of our lungs. We had 3 million plus Australian people on Parliament's lawn, screaming it, hoping to God that people would listen. We didn't fail. We were hidden away. We were subjected to a totally different type of, and for people like yourself who have put it all out there, risk losing your entire career, having the letters before you and after your name just wiped away from you, that you have not failed. What you've done is you've gone up against such tremendous odds, such an amazing force, which is big tech. That it's astounding that we even found you ourselves, much less that you were able to get your information to the public. So please don't be sitting there feeling like you've made any failings at all, because it's just definitely not the case.
I appreciate that. We have a lot of work to do, and we need to do it, and we need to put these criminals in jail.
I would love to introduce you to our good Senator Malcolm Roberts. At some point, I know you must be very chockers with interviews and seminars, conferences, trying to share all of this information. But if we can be of any assistance in sharing the word from our end, as well as linking you with other names that we know of, then that's the least that we can do.
Please do that. I will talk to whomever we need to talk to make the changes, to get the people motivated to hold all of these criminals in each of the countries accountable and to stop the killing, the death, the maiming that's been going on and the future manipulation that they have plans to do.
As well as the post-trauma that future generations will be facing, for sure. I believe it'll probably take a couple of generations to really recover from all of this time in history.
It probably will, but we need to get started now. Yeah.
6 months
sooner than later.
Sorry,
that's fine. I was just going to ask Richard where people can find him or where they can follow him.
Well, the FBI and the CIA can probably help you with that.
Oh, Richard.
There's a website called FlemingMethod.com, FlemingMethod.com. I post a lot of stuff on there. I do a lot of presentations. Crimes Against Humanity Tour, I'll put into one word, is another site. We did tours last year. We'll do more this year. 10letters.org, we're going to be posting more things on there. We actually had a group of people go to Long Island and deliver the documents to the four district attorneys on Long Island, and they're now going to follow up with them once a week. And the first one of them has acknowledged receiving the documents. Another one says it's outside of her jurisdiction, although we're pressing that because she thinks that the jurisdiction belongs to the Attorney General of the state. And I've encouraged the people to go there and film her saying that it's not in her jurisdiction to protect the people of Long Island, and to see if she wants to go on record as saying, well, it is the responsibility of the Attorney General of New York. And we'll use that to go to the Attorney General of New York and go, well, the district attorneys of Long Island say it's your job. How about you step up and actually do the job that you took the oath to do, right? That, and you can probably stalk me on Twitter. You know, a lot of people seem to be doing that these days.
It's terrible, honestly. But you've really got to have all of these different platforms just to sort of keep up with everybody. I mean, oh, yeah. Plus it helps when you get banned one day from posting on one, you can go to the next one and then the next one. My YouTube channel has just been absolutely decimated over COVID. I mean, I had some brilliant stuff up there. I've been doing this since before Fukushima actually became the major issue that it still is today, that nobody seems to care about. And I had hours and hours of work. As soon as I started to mention, well, actually, the first time we put up an interview, I think, was the Dr. Malone interview, or everything just got deleted straight away after that. It was like they took out that interview, and then they went, well, hang on, let's just see what else this guy's got here. And then they just progressively went back and back and back. 10 years worth of material, just gone overnight. Unbelievable. So, yeah, luckily, there is half a dozen different platforms that we can use. Twitter. Yes. At this point is a heck of a lot freer than what it was, but I still think that the reins are sort of still there a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Like, he says full transparency. Well, where's Alex Jones? Doesn't he get a voice?
Yeah. Well, we're going to see if we can get back on Alex Jones here pretty soon and start spreading the word with him too. But, you know, we'll see just how free Twitter wants to be. I mean, it certainly lets people attack me.
If you could leave the viewers with one last thing, what would that be? What would you like everybody at home to be thinking? 10 letters, of course. We'll have that running across the screen the whole time. But...
right. 10letters.org. And to also recognize that this planet, because of the work of very bad people, has literally been run through the mill, as they say, for the last 39 months. It is a testament to humanity that despite being so manipulated and so controlled, that we have survived as well as we have. And it is the human character to want to survive, to live, and to protect those that we consider important. And it's incumbent on all of us to do everything we can for the people we care about in our lives and people that are looking for answers, to share that information, to share what's happened, and to take the necessary steps so that we can build a future where this type of abuse, of power, of harm stops and can never again raise its ugly head. For us to do the work that we thought we were starting a half a century ago, but this time to really do it. We can do it. Humanity can do it, or I wouldn't be spending my time doing this.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Dr. Fleming, to speak with you and your just walking knowledge everywhere you go with all of your qualifications. So I thank you for making the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Richard M. Fleming.